I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romaine.
And you're listening to the SupDoc podcast, where we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite documentaries.
In this episode, we talk about the 2008 documentary, I Think We're Alone Now.
This film centers on two individuals, Jeff and Kelly, and their mutual obsession with the 80s pop icon Tiffany.
Yeah, and we sit down to discuss I Think We're Alone Now with comedian Sarah June.
One thing I know about you, which I've never talked to you about.
Okay. We've never talked that much, so this is not surprising.
Yeah, is you are responsible for...
Yeah.
Did we not talk about this?
No, we can talk about it. It's fine.
She did the Nyan
this sounds cat. It sounds like I'm about to be like, I'm a porn star secretly. But no, it's a meme. I made a meme.
Yeah, made a meme.
Yeah.
The Nyan cat, you know, the cat with the toast and the rainbow and like this. Yeah.
Anyway. He doesn't know. So
it's
now
great.
Now you look like an idiot.
Yeah. Like, why did I bring this up?
It
on
is pretty
podcast?
Great when my friends try and tell their friends, because half the time the friends flip out and they're like, oh, my God, really? That's crazy. And then the other half of the time, it's exact like, same yeah. reaction that Paco yeah. just had, where he just shook his head and
well,
shrugged.
I was born in the early 40s. And I don't understand. What's this
He wants
meme?
To hear about a hep cat, not
yeah,
a neon cat.
Do you have any, so it's a toaster?
It's
a flying. Is it the flying toaster that used to happen?
No, I don't know what you're, I do not know what you're talking about. Ever.
The flying toaster?
I don't even know it. It's so old.
Oh, it's
the flying toaster.
That's Pelly's. Well, congratulations on your meme.
Oh, thank you.
Now a stand-up comic.
Yep.
Had a yep. meme a couple years ago.
Had a
but
meme.
It was passed around a lot.
It was passed around a lot. Yeah.
Well, yeah. How many YouTube hits did that thing get?
It's over 100 million now.
What?
We have it. Yeah, this is like a YouTube celebrity. We have.
We do have the internet here in San Francisco, don't we? We could go look at the current view count if you really wanted
I don't
to.
Think
but
this house gets YouTube. this house was built by the Chinese consulate. So,
oh, okay.
Speaking of, that's the only place I could find. I Think We're Alone Now.
Oh,
YouTube?
Yeah.
YouTube?
It was not on Netflix.
Nice segue, George.
I found it at a really cool video store in Austin called I Love Video, which is great. And it was like featured. It was like a staff pick. And I was like, this looks depressing and good.
HBO documentaries.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where I saw it originally.
Oh, cool.
It was on the HBizzle.
It came out on DVD 2010. Is what I saw. And apparently there was commentary tracks that we should have watched. I looked some stuff up,
yeah.
which came out in the commentary tracks. But we can get to
I was
that.
Watching it on a DVD. Yeah. I totally should have watched the commentary yeah. tracks.
Well, but let's get into what it is.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. So why did you, Sarah, pick
yes.
this documentary?
Partly because it was the most recent documentary that I had watched when you asked me if I wanted to do this podcast.
Good answer.
But also because I really enjoyed it. And I don't watch a ton of documentaries. I probably should watch. I have like many of them bookmarked, but then whenever I want to watch something, I'm always like, I'll just watch Gilmore Girls again. But yeah, it was really good. And I thought it was unique as a documentary speaking of just documentaries that I've seen, just because it was so low budget and so, I don't know. I mean, I guess low budget is just the only word for it. It was very raw. It just felt very raw, partly because of the low budgetness. It didn't seem like, I don't really like watching documentaries where there's a ton of talking heads. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I would have liked, I think, the subject matter of something like An Inconvenient Truth or that documentary Water that just came out, they look very slick and very boring. And I would prefer to watch something that essentially looks like a home movie of two people who I would probably never meet in real life who, or if I did meet them, I would just let them talk. Yep. Because there's nothing to be said. You know what I mean? You saw the documentary. Like, they say things, and then the filmmakers just let them keep going, and they continue to say more and more and more crazy things.
Yeah, I think that what I read was that the director met Jeff Turner, the Santa Cruz fellow. He's Sean Donnelly, is that his name?
I think so, yeah.
He's from Santa Cruz. And actually just hired him to be like an extra in some narrative film he was making.
Oh.
Got to be friends with him and just realized like, oh, you're that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who was obsessed with Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started in 2002. So there's been basically footage. And he was at NYU Film School.
Uh-huh.
And so he would just visit Santa Cruz, check in on Jeff.
Wow.
So it's really like over a period of... The movie came out in 2008. So I think it's footage from 2002 to 2007.
Oh, wow.
It's like a five-year arc. Of like, let's check in on Jeff.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
he into now? Oh,
which I like.
Building a bike helmet that can communicate telepathically with Tiffany.
Yeah.
That's
what,
great.
What was the, what are they
radionics?
Called?
Radionics? Yeah, radiometry, I think.
Radionics,
radiometry, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, on one level, I can kind of see where it's sort of, I mean, that's why it's pseudoscience, I guess, is, you know, on one level you can sort of see, yeah, that kind of makes sense, where he's like, quartzes, they have powers. And you're like, okay, well, you know, we put crystals of certain kinds in batteries and they do sort of have, it's like really a stretch. But then you see what he's made and it's a bike helmet with crystals attached to it.
Right.
Actually, I put this on, I'm in communication, in a spiritual sense and a spiritual level with Tiffany, actually, because the whole thing is set up for her, to be communicate with her.
And the thing that really got me about the documentary, I think what probably hit me the hardest in watching it, is when Jeff Turner talks about how he and Tiffany are best friends.
I know.
Yeah, because he hits on that a lot. By the government. The government friend-zoned him.
That's funny. Hashtag friend-zoned government.
Like, legally friend-zoned.
That's
yeah.
funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's... I mean, he really walks the tightrope of being like kind of sweet and unassuming
yes.
and batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. kind of like, this guy could be dangerous.
Okay, so the follow up.
We should maybe explain. We should do a quick synopsis of what the documentary is. The documentary is it's about two different people who are both nurture these very deep obsessions with the 80s pop star Tiffany, who has a song called I Think We're Alone Now, from which the title of the documentary hath sprung. And one of them is Jeff Turner, who lives in Santa Cruz. And the other one is Kelly McCormick, a trans woman who lives in Denver. And most of the documentary takes place in their respective cities of residence. And then near the end, they converge and stay in a hotel together when they go to Las Vegas to see Tiffany perform.
Perfect storm of crazy.
Absolutely perfect storm of crazy. They hate each other.
They do hate each other, which is kind of an Asperger's thing.
Oh, but
as well.
It's I mean, they both think they're competing for Tiffany against each other.
Yes. Yeah. And they both have outstanding restraining orders, I think.
Yeah.
Kelly does not have any restraining orders. And Jeff Turner, do you remember what year it was that he got the restraining order?
Oh, well, so 80, the year that Tiffany tried to emancipate herself.
Oh, it was the same year.
Yeah, so I want to say that's 89 or 88.
Here's an article about the sword. Samurai fan arrested as he waits for pop star Tiffany with a sword.
The time that Jeff went down to the Los Angeles Superior Court with the sword and chrysanthemums was probably a high point in the comic opera story of Jeff Turner's life.
I thought a card and flowers would be sufficient. I don't know what the purpose of giving Tiffany a weapon would be.
Giving someone a katana and five white chrysanthemums, that is about the highest honor you could give someone as a ceremonial presentation in Japan. Never got to give it to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
I like that he has all these newspaper clippings of himself, and it's
yes.
like, oh, here's the time this happened.
Yeah.
Oh, and here is the restraining order I got.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But he is a very intelligent person.
Yeah.
As
he
a
clearly.
Lot of people with Asperger's are. Is mm-hmm. it Burgers or Burgers?
It's Purgers.
Purgers. I would say like a B.
What?
I mean, pop my B's.
My friend Rob has a sketch about a doctor telling a man that his son is Burgers.
Who
it's called Is Burgers. It's a comic in Austin named Rob Gagnon and John Buseman.
Oh,
it's
Rob Gagnon.
Oh, it's
I
really good. It's yeah. He's okay. Your. I have to tell you, sir. Your son is Burgers, and then it's the entire thing is just burger puns. It's I think it's on Vimeo.
I'm already laughing. That's so hard at that premise because I love puns. But yeah, no, he makes a joke about Steve Reich at some point. Like he's like pounding on his friend's head and he's like, Reichian head explosion. I'm like, what? That is what a nerd.
He's
the
super
biggest,
nerdy.
And
he's
I got nerd. The reference. Yeah. I'm like, I'm extra nerdy.
Yeah.
You,
yes. Yeah.
In parallel. He has a friend who you think is normal.
Mm.
You think
yeah.
Jeff's friend is normal
yeah.
until then they're just like, no, well, you know, what we talk about is a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're both really deep into that.
Yeah.
But everyone treats him like, like even his friend is like, I like the guy. Like he has to be like, you know, I know I actually like him.
Yeah.
Like everyone has to preface like that. Kelly's friend in the beginning of the movie is terrible.
Is that also her? It's her roommate also, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because basically Kelly lives with someone who's like, oh, I met Kelly, and who mixes up Kelly's genders.
Yeah,
and
constantly.
Also constantly.
And like sort of refuses to accept that she is trans.
Yes.
And just keeps calling her him. And is a I believe
well,
it's a gay
met at
man,
Bally's
right?
Total Fitness.
Yeah,
they met at Bally's.
Yeah.
They went clubbing together, and this is like your friend roommate who's like, He's kind of a freak, but, you know, I've gotten used to him.
Oh, well, the rent's cheap.
Yeah.
Basically, like, their friendship
is, it's
like,
cheap because Kelly has decorated the entire apartment with printed out pictures of Tiffany. Of like, Tiffany. All along the wall, like a frieze along the walls.
Let's describe Kelly as best as we can. Like, first, how do you
very
describe
tall.
Kelly? She is tall. But, like,
very into fitness.
And it opens with her showing off her running prowess.
I think that's the only clip. I saw that clip before I ever saw this movie. Like, years ago, I saw that clip.
That is the clip that whenever I've been talking about this documentary to my friends is I tell them about it because it's so perfectly executed and it's so perfectly timed. Yeah. And that's, it was just, it encapsulates, I think, that character, that person.
For a demonstration of my running capabilities, I'll put on a little show for you guys here. And I was only going maybe about 7% of 27 and 10% of my actual running speed.
And she talks about how because she's in Denver is like a really good place to train because the air is so thin. So, I mean, I think this is also a real thing. Yeah, no, athletes who train in Denver, then when they go to, you know, regular places with regular air.
Also why weed is much better, apparently.
Yes, apparently. Yeah. And you can drink less capacity in Denver and you will have more of an effect.
And comedy is better because you're losing
high. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, she first talks, she talks about being a professional athlete.
Mm-hmm. She's always wearing like running shoes and like a North Face type of fleece thing.
And the only thing I was like, she's got mom butt. You know, like,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I noticed
very
that.
Prominent overbite and or just weird,
like, kind of, I think not naturally blonde hair, sort of bleached hair,
either red or blonde through most
it's difficult
movie.
To tell.
But what she shares with Jeff is a love of Tiffany.
Love is maybe not the right word.
Look, like, how are we to define love?
Yeah.
Oh, the state defined it.
Well, this
them.
Is yeah, well, this was I was glad that they It's so hard for me to talk about this without getting upset because at one point Jeff talks about the restraining order that he received and just all of this, you know, why he loves Tiffany so much. And I mean, you don't ever hear the documentarians ask the questions. They cut out all of it. You don't ever hear them speak. But I think they asked him something along the lines of like, do you ever think that it is wrong to stalk Tiffany, or do you think that you were stalking her? And he defends himself against the restraining order that he received and abided by, you know, it should be pointed out, basically by saying, I just love her. There's no way that love can be wrong. It's not stalking because I love her. Mm. And that's such a classic stalker abusive relationship thing that I absolutely shriveled up. It's like, I just love her. There's no way that love can be wrong.
Tiffany and I have known each other most of her life, and we are in love with each other, and she's a great singer. Oh, we've kissed. Oh, yeah, we have. Yeah. No tongue. Yeah, that didn't happen.
But on the mouth?
Could have.
I think this is a good time to ask if anyone here has had a stalker experience, either on the stalky or stalker side.
That's a good question. I had a girl who showed up at my house a few times in the morning and at night would be on my front porch, and it was kind of eerie.
Did you have some kind of relationship at some point?
She was just this bartender at the bar I would go to, Bilbo's in Kalamazoo, and she just liked me, I guess. But one morning I came out and she was just standing on my front porch, and she was just like, hi, good morning, and I was like, whoa.
What year was this?
1994, 95.
Okay. Interesting. I'm interested in how stalkers operated before cell phones became so ubiquitous and Facebook and social media and stuff. So, I mean, clearly you met in person, but then I think stalkers now rely on a lot of social media.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And then I'd come home and she'd be on my front porch, and then it happened a few times, and I just told her, I'm like, I'm not very comfortable with seeing you on my front porch in the morning and at night. So
I feel like I've done things that
were
a little stalky.
All right. Here we go.
I think a lot of people have,
and I think it's okay to admit and to know that that's fucked up and, you know.
To have a realization now as an adult.
I've did something that probably could have been construed as stalking if we hadn't dated post. Because
so you stalked her.
That doesn't make.
Yeah. So you stalked her and then you guys started dating?
Yeah.
So it still not, could be. It still could be.
It could be construed because, like, I took a class. I saw her on campus. She was the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen in my life, and I found out she was taking Spanish language classes, and I signed up for German classes just to be in the same building as she was.
Why didn't you sign up for Spanish classes?
Because I wanted to learn German.
All right, I wouldn't call that stalking.
But then I followed her a lot.
Oh, well, that part.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
let's go there.
And then, and then I couldn't get the nerve to ever talk to her. Mm. And then I would see her places and I would try to talk and I couldn't. But like, basically, I mean, it wasn't too stalkery. But I did spend money on a college course I didn't need. And now that you brought it up kind of in a very dumb way, I guess I should have taken the same class.
Well, like there's a thing you can do.
If you were dedicated, you would have taken Spanish.
Yeah, but it was no bueno.
There's a thing you can do.
Also, that would have been a smarter choice just overall for your life.
Yeah, that's true.
What if you just hang out where you know they like to hang out?
That's what I did. I went to the bar that
Well, that's a thing
to.
I think a lot of people do that I wouldn't necessarily call a stalker behavior as long as it does not last for a long time. And it's also, it's one thing to stalk somebody that you don't know and to have them never notice you. Mm. And I mean, it's hard to, I think stalking is, I mean, I guess we could just look at the legal definition of it, but I think it's worse to stalk somebody when they've spoken to you and said, I've made it clear that they know you, they don't want to be around you. They don't want you to follow them. If you're stalking somebody and they don't notice you, then it's still not good, but it's,
Yeah, no, not good.
I mean, it's not good.
Like that word. Or is it just?
It's just.
The
I
men
mean,
here are like doing very badly right now. I think.
No, I mean, I can. I don't think. Well, that's the thing. Now I'm like, what if somebody has sort of stalked me in that voyeuristic way, and I just never noticed?
Yeah, I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah,
maybe
could have happened.
Could have happened, maybe.
But I don't know. I also, you know, when I was in middle school, I signed up to work on a play because I liked a guy who was in the play.
All
so,
right.
like, you know,
now we're getting somewhere.
Am I a stalker?
No.
No, not in middle school.
Not in middle school, no.
It's just cute in middle school.
See, that's the thing. Yeah, in middle school, it's cute.
Right.
And then at one point, does it become not cute?
25, I think.
That's a pretty good cutoff.
Yeah, you shouldn't be in a child's play when you're 25.
Yeah.
You're in a child's image in junior high play.
I tried out for Peter Pan.
I've definitely, I mean.
Peter Pan is usually played by adult women.
That is true.
Yeah. In situations where it is adults doing the thing. Mm-hmm. It's weird to see Peter Pan put on by children.
Yeah, it doesn't. Anything
it
put
feels
on
a
by
little.
Children is weird.
Well, there is a lot of sexual subtext in Peter Pan.
Is there? I want to party
in the
with
movie
you.
Between Peter Pan and Tiger Lily, for sure. And between Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell.
And Tinkerbell is a jealous
I was
bitch.
Of, I was
yeah,
Captain Hook, but all right, that's fine.
What about it's Captain me. Hook?
I don't know. Just the, you know what? I'm yeah. thinking of a comic book that is like a sexual Peter Pan.
Weird.
That I, it's like, I think it's Alan Moore did like this.
Okay, so you're thinking of sexual tension in a comic book for adults in which
yes.
there was a sexual relationship between characters. Yeah.
Well, also, this
I mean,
is San
I thought,
Francisco.
I, yeah.
Do you, there's a million Peter Pans all around San
yeah.
Francisco.
Well, I found it weird that Tinkerbell in the Disney movie, I don't remember if it's in the book or not, Tinkerbell is very jealous of
yes.
of Wendy because
oh, yeah.
Wendy and Peter Pan spent a lot of time together. And I found that weird because Tinkerbell seems to be an adult fairy.
Yeah. She's a beam of light usually.
Yeah.
In
but she's a little stacked, like
yeah.
for a you know, for
oh,
a
yeah.
beam of light.
She's yeah, no, no.
She's got nice boobs.
Well, I don't know what relationship she can have with
a
boy.
Yeah, an avowed child.
Mm. Yeah.
So why do you think
got off the rails into Tinkerbell?
Let's get back
talk.
To the doc. And you know, Tiffany, it's weird because Tiffany was famous for like a week. You know,
yeah, that's
like
the thing is
year.
This was okay. Sorry, I was born in the 90s, but
I accept your apology.
I had never heard of Tiffany before this documentary. This was the first I had ever heard of Tiffany, and I've seen I Love the 80s.
You yeah. could have been conceived to Tiffany.
Oh.
I don't think so. I really doubt it. I was probably conceived to Pink Floyd.
Oh, sweet.
Just, you know, keeping my parents' musical taste in mind.
Yeah. And they're
probably it was like the wall.
Just smoking some weed.
Steve to the wall.
Yeah. Nice. Well, explains a lot about me.
Because like yeah. I remember I'm old enough to remember when Tiffany was a hot item on the Billboard charts.
As mm-hmm. am I.
And that, I remember that song was gigantic.
I think we're alone now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, everywhere for like a year. But yeah. she made most of her like stardom in malls. That was her big thing. Mm. She did shows in malls.
Yeah. And now that I think about it, the fact that her biggest hit was a cover.
It's a cover, right?
Might explain why she financially still has to go do all these things. Because her biggest hit, she didn't have the publishing rights on.
Yeah.
But she had performance rights, so I'm sure she still got paid a lot. But yeah, she had to make her money doing the performances.
And in the movie, they show quite a few Tiffany performances and appearances. Mm-hmm. She doesn't appear. So there's,
I think, a porn convention.
Yeah, the first time that we see her in the movie, she's at a porn convention because she had posed for Playboy at some point. Mm-hmm. And we go to the porn convention with Jeff, and he mm-hmm. is very diffident about the fact that it's a porn convention. He keeps using all these other. He's like, it's a community of like-minded people. Yeah. That's kind of his.
Because he's gone super Christian, also. Yeah, I don't know how long he's been Christian.
Yeah.
It might have been after the stock. It might have been after the stock.
This is one reason why I really like this documentary, and I think it spans such a long period. And so Jeff goes through all these weird phases, and so he sees Tiffany at this porn convention. He goes and sees her perform. There's the Las Vegas performance. I think there's like a no. The book signing is at the porn convention. She's signing copies of Playboy or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Las Vegas performance and such. And then she's clearly on some kind of a tour in which she stops in Las Vegas. And then by the end of the documentary, Jeff has moved on.
Yeah.
To Alyssa Milano.
Oh. Yeah, let's save that little nugget for a little later.
We'll save it.
Because that's just
foreshadowing.
Yeah, that's amazing. But Jeff, he's very buttoned up fella.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah,
he's got that bad relationship with his stepdad, dad.
And his stepdad, who is obsessed with model trains, does not have Asperger's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he seems very mean to Jeff.
Also was his dad's friend and married his mom when his dad died in the war.
Yeah, in the Korean War.
All kind of like very strange.
Yeah. And stuff. I mean, he's not out and out mean, but he's just very insensitive. He's very
dismissive.
Very dismissive. That's a good word for it. Yeah.
He calls him like, I don't know what he says to his face. Yeah. But he does say some mean stuff.
Does Jeff talk about being more physical abuse when he was younger, or am I getting that mixed up with something else? I'm thinking of Crumb. I also watched Crumb around the same time, and I'm like, wow, our Crumb's dad was a monster.
Was just last week.
His stepfather seems like a royal dick. Anyone I think who's into miniature trains is probably an asshole.
Probably a real controlling dude.
I have the feeling. And then so
He won't let Jeff touch the model trains.
No.
Because at some point, Jeff dropped one or did something wrong. Yeah. Probably when he was like 16. And Jeff is... How old is Jeff at the time of the documentary?
I want 15. To say... Yeah. Well, he was 35 when he brought the flowers. So this is at least more than a decade later.
So he's around 45, 50.
Yeah. He's in his 50s.
He does not look 50. Yeah. He looks like he's in his 30s, and it might just be because he has such like a round face.
He's a round face, and he hasn't worked really a regular job
that's true.
Forever. He's on SSI.
Doesn't seem like he goes outside much.
When I read the IMDb comments on this movie, there were so many people that were just like, this is the welfare state gone wrong. Yeah. How are these people on SSI and like
going to
Vegas? I'm like, dude, chill out. Like, they can spend money however they want.
Yeah,
that's true.
He's also like living with his parents and does not seem to have like a super...
I thought he had an apartment. Or he maybe has like a den or something.
Well, he gets a new mattress.
Yeah.
You're right. No, he has his own apartment. Yeah. It's a crazy hoarder apartment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Hey, let's not judge.
Well,
let's lay off this hoarder shaming.
He is let's call it a pack rat.
Okay. We'll call it that.
At the beginning of the closer to the beginning of the documentary, there's a nice pan of the apartment and you can see all his stacks of newspapers and magazines and clothes. He's got a lot of clothes, just in piles.
That is true. And he dresses like poorly. He has a lot of clothes.
And he seems to wear pretty much the same thing most of the time.
I just see like a Homer Simpson closet just like the same sweater.
Yeah. And then he's got his little radionics corner,
yeah, he does.
Which is very dirty for somebody who claims to be like working on essentially a science project. It was like very dusty. And I was like, how are you going to reach Tiffany with such dusty crystals?
Yeah. You got to keep your lab.
Dusty crystals should have been his
nice and clean.
Sounds like a Fleetwood Mac album.
Yeah. Dusty crystals.
Yeah, he's a character, all right. Seems pretty affable. Seems pretty harmless. I think most people...
I buy the whole, you know, I was presenting the sword to her as a sign of respect thing. Yeah. Absolutely do.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those things where law enforcement people wouldn't.
Yeah.
They're like, you have a knife.
Oh, if somebody was presenting me with that, I would be like, I believe you, but I'm still going to get a restraining order because I don't know, you know, people shoot pop stars because they love them so much.
Yeah. Well, that actually got referenced. There was one guy who was a Tiffany fan who, when he couldn't get to Tiffany, ended up killing an actress, Rebecca something. I kind of remember this happening.
Yeah.
In the 90s, I think. Yeah, that this
so
guy.
Why did he kill the actress? Was it because he thought it was Tiffany or
no,
she was close to
moved,
Tiffany?
I think he had moved on from
Tiffany. Oh, okay.
And had fixated on someone else.
God. Oh, wow.
And it's
amazing that Tiffany was famous for so short of a time period and yet accumulated all these stalkers. And it just makes me wonder, you know, other pop stars, like how many stalkers do they have?
Like Beyonce or Lady Gaga or something?
Yeah.
I'm sure they have lots. That's so weird. That's the weird thing about fame. Is especially with like, you know, a female pop star, I would think that like they probably have tons.
But like, yeah, I think your point about like in a pre-internet era, like if you wanted to stalk someone, you really had to put in the man
hours. You had to be very, very dedicated.
Yeah, you had to be dedicated with that stuff.
It's very easy to lightly stalk someone now because there's, you know, Foursquare is essentially like, would you like to stalk me? Here you go.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
I know, nobody's thought about Foursquare in a while, but.
That's more on Foursquare.
Yeah, no, really.
But what I like is, like, what I picked up is, I Think We're Alone Now, the song. I Think We're Alone Now, the title of the doc. And then just how lonely you know, these two seem, Kelly and
Jeff.
And Jeff. Like, they just, like, just seems like such a lonely, and it's also, they're so socially awkward.
Yeah.
And so, like, not being able to talk to people, basically being alone all the time and having this delusional stalking dream of Tiffany. It just seems so sad to me.
That was I ended up looking it up later. Because I had never really experienced, somebody being obsessed with a pop star or anyone else. I think it's more common to have an erotic fixation on a famous person and to say, I love them and I want to be with them. I think a lot of people have that sort of worship of famous people. But to have kind of the inverse of that, which is not only I love Tiffany, I want to be with Tiffany, but also Tiffany loves me. Tiffany is my best friend. Tiffany and I talk on the phone, which are all things that Jeff Turner says. That was strange to me. And so it turns out that's called erotomania.
Oh.
And that was a sort of a behavior that it comes up in a number of mental illnesses and personality disorders and stuff. But I'd never seen anything like that before. Like to have somebody be like, I mean, he would say like, I talked to Tiffany on the phone.
Tiffany is for 7 hours.
Tiffany is a great friend.
Yeah.
That's stuff like that. That really, I mean, he would talk to Kelly and he clearly was sort of swinging his dick and being like, me and Tiffany are best friends. And not even Kelly believed him.
Yeah,
I was like, you're full of shit. Kelly knows that she and Tiffany have never talked.
Yeah.
You know, she's not under the delusion that Tiffany loves her, but she thinks that Tiffany would love her if they got to know each other.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. And when they bring those two together in Las Vegas, oh, Lord. And
sparks fly.
Sparks did fly. And, like, my boy Jeff was like, oh, maybe if you lose that body fat, if you lose that paunch of yours, maybe it'd help you out better.
Yeah, you're body so mean. Shame that trans person. That sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I think, a bit of the Aspergers.
And a little bit of the Aspergers.
Is.
And then at one point, Jeff is talking about he and Tiffany are such good friends, and Kelly just says something like, please stop. I need you to stop talking.
I did like that.
She's like, you're taking the words out of my mouth. This is over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I wanted to know more, a little bit more about what that was all about. Mm-hmm. Like, just the whole meeting. I think if, like, now there's a different kind of style in documentaries where I think they give you a little bit more setup. Mm-hmm. I think in the 2000s, they enjoyed more of the clip kind of sense of the documentaries where you're like we were talking about, Meet the Fock, the Falcons, about how we're like, all of a sudden the Christian group is just
A high, that's a high budget movie compared to this,
but it's older. Yeah, it's true. But just in the 2000s, anyways, it seemed like more of a style.
Sort of smoothing transitions over with maybe voiceover from the documentarians or voiceover from a sort of a curtain interview with the subjects. But with this documentary, they don't ever interview them in a separate location. They're always interviewed in their house or at a Tiffany show or just out in public. But there's none of that. You know, reality show style, it'll cut to somebody with just a velvet curtain behind them and they're talking. They're like, when she said that to me, I felt really upset. You know, and there's none of that. You just see everything.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Do you feel... I'm going to just ask the question that was on my mind after I got through with this. Did you feel like it was exploitative? Like the director made choices that... I have read some interviews with him where he feels like he actually like cut out stuff that was worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still felt a little bit mean, I thought.
I did not feel guilty after watching it. So I guess... viscerally, I didn't ever feel like it was exploitative. There's certainly a cringe factor, but I think those extra cringe moments, like the running, the famous running scene that we mentioned, those are few and far between.
Right.
I think for the most part, and I think one reason that I didn't feel like it was exploitative is that the director included interviews with their friends and their family, which I think helps ground them in more of a reality. They are alone most of the time, but they do have these friends who, yes, they're very like, yeah, I know Jeff's a weird guy, but blah, blah, you know. And then at the end of the documentary, Kelly makes a friend who seems very normal and just like a nice lady, you know, who's totally aware of Kelly's, you know, shall we say, quirks, but is forgiving of them. And, you know, and you get to see, the thing I like is you get to see Kelly being normal with her.
Yeah.
You get to see Kelly just sort of joking around and talking about things that aren't Tiffany.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like there's kind of a quasi happy ending for the people.
Yeah. Cause both of them release their grip on the obsession a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was the Vice magazine interview with Sean, the director, and they brought that question up too. Like, was it exploiting them? And he basically said, if you didn't like these guys in person, you're not going to like what they said in the movie. And if you did like these people in person, you would understand where they're coming from. So it was his job just to like let it roll. And that, but he also did say exactly that he did cut some stuff out that if he hadn't, it was all in good fun, but it would have made them look even dumber or whatever the term, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's what the filmmaker has to do. You have to make those calls of what you're going to leave in and what you're going to, but like,
cause you can't show everything.
No. And when you're, especially when there's mental illness involved, it's like you have to show what's going on and people are going to take objection to it because they feel bad for the person. But
yeah,
like, this is how we do it. This is how you make them.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like that it seemed to give them a lot of space to talk. There are really long takes. He lets each of his subjects go on for quite a while about what it is they're talking about and really explain themselves. And I think that was one reason it felt fairly honest and fairly like on an even footing, because he lets them just go on and go on. And if they shoot themselves in the foot talking, then that's what they do. But it feels like I got the sense that what you see in the documentary is close to what it's like to actually hang out with them.
Yeah.
Apparently the commentary is pretty priceless.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, I guess, Kelly talking some mad shit.
Oh, really?
Jeff.
Oh, that sounds great.
And saying like how delusional he is because he thinks he's friends with.
That's amazing.
And the commentary, apparently Kelly has new girlfriend. So every time there's a thing like about Kelly loving Tiffany, Kelly says, I love Deborah, or what? I'm not doing the voice. I just said Kermit again.
Kermit once again.
Just said Kermit again.
I love Piggy. also, weirdly, and it's not, I don't know what, it's not a major point, but it is weird that Kelly chose to do this in the documentary. In the commentary, and this is just, I read it, I didn't actually watch the commentary, but Kelly is like, oh, I wasn't born intersex.
Whereas in the documentary, she states that she was born intersex and is choosing as a woman.
It's just like she represented herself in this way in the documentary. For what reason is unclear.
Yeah.
To either garnish more sympathy or or maybe believed something.
Yeah.
It was a little unclear why that was the case.
Yeah.
But is living fully as a trans woman now, I believe.
So, yeah. That's another strange thing.
Yeah.
God, that apartment. For some reason, Kelly's apartment bothered me more than Jeff's apartment because Jeff's apartment it was very consistently, seemed like the place of somebody who was not totally stable. And he has these piles of stuff, piles of books, piles of clothes, a lot of dust everywhere, a lot of dirt, generally kind of crappy. But Kelly's apartment looked pretty normal, except that there were all these pictures of Tiffany taped up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then that post, that like sort of quintessential college poster, of two girls in underwear kissing. And then underneath, Kelly has labeled it, Tiffany.
Soon, I think.
Soon, yes.
Soon.
This will happen soon.
Yeah.
And then, like, what is Kelly on? What is she on most of the documentary? Is she drunk?
No, I think
she has some brain damage.
I think she has some brain damage. Because they talk about how... she talks about how... No, she doesn't talk about it. It's like her friend, her roommate. About the accident, yeah. So part of Kelly's obsession with Tiffany... Kelly apparently never gave a shit about Tiffany. And then Kelly got in a bike accident... And was in, I think, a coma.
Yeah.
And
she says
it was a coma. And in the coma had a vision of Tiffany singing to her.
Or like a woman who looked like Tiffany, had never seen Tiffany before.
Yeah.
Because it was like 87, or like right when Tiffany
Tiffany was like, seemed to have been vaguely on the periphery of Kelly's perception before this bike accident.
And then had a Walkman put on her head and like heard the song and saw the picture and was like, oh, that was the vision in my dream.
She is the goddess who spoke to me. Mm-hmm. I am now obsessed with Tiffany.
After I woke up out of a coma on July 4th of 1987, my sister handed me a Walkman. I was barely able to even move at that point in time. Very first song I heard was Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now. And then I asked my sister if she could bring me a picture of her. I'm not kidding. I almost fell back in the coma because, There she was. Until that point, I never even heard of Tiffany.
Because it seemed like she was kind of a drinker.
Appears to have been a drinker.
She did have a problem, apparently, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The roommate referenced it, and I think I read another thing where it was about, basically didn't really have her shit together. But that could be, again,
Most of her speech pattern I attributed to... lasting brain damage from this very serious accident.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think who the modern day analog to Tiffany would be.
Would it be Miley? Or Miley's been around longer.
Miley has a lot more staying power. Maybe Lorde. No, it remains to be seen. I think Lorde is too talented.
Just split with her manager, so it's kind of up in the air what's going to happen.
Funny. There's the pop stars now are not like the pop stars of the Mickey Mouse Club. They seem to be more in control of their careers, like Taylor Swift and Lorde and such. They all write their own songs, and I wouldn't say they're entirely self-invented, but they're more of artists than just performers.
Do you like documentaries with this kind of theme, generally, or is
obsession?
Well, obsession, loneliness.
Yeah, That's a weird. I'm like, yeah, I do, yeah. And I wish I didn't.
No, but that's good. It's fine too. Like, why? Why do you think that is?
I think it's because a lot of people are lonely a lot of the time, and extreme loneliness is something that people don't talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's harder and harder to be lonely now, and a lot less and less people even spend time alone now. And so people who are shut-ins or who are socially isolated are more and more rare. And it's interesting to see the kind of world that yeah. you know, a single person can construct around themselves.
They'll always have Reddit. They're going to find a way online to communicate with right. someone, probably.
Have you seen the documentary about the people who are in costume on Hollywood Boulevard?
No. Oh, what's that called? I have heard about it. I haven't seen it.
It's really, really good. And it's like the guy who plays Batman and mm-hmm. the guy who plays Spider-Man and the woman who plays Wonder Woman. And they're just like... I'm going to make it. I'm basically a star now.
I'm nodding so hard because this is exactly the kind of thing I like to watch. People who are like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to marry Tiffany. I'm going to become a movie star. I'm going to this. I'm going to that. It's like
delusion in that. And
because everybody has it is the thing. We all have delusion.
Why would we as comedians feel any relationship
why I asked the question, because like I'm also drawn to those. I love... slices of weird Americana mm-hmm. documentaries.
Yeah. American Movie is a really good example of that.
American Movie is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an incredible... There's thankfully lots of them, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons that propelled this documentary or this podcast, because I love them and I want to talk to them about it. And I have the same affinity. I like watching kind of like, you know, people who have a good heart, just kind of misplaced energy and ambition, but they have desires that we all have as well. And then you root for them because mm-hmm. you're like, I know what you're going through because I feel the same thing.
Everybody has a desire for some kind of achievement of that kind or some kind of relationship like that. Theirs is just a little twisted.
A little twisted.
Actually, I read in that same Vice interview that Sean Donnelly did get some time with Tiffany on camera, but decided not to use it. Because he was like, you know, she was just kind of talking about normal stuff, and it kind of just demystifies this character mm-hmm. too much. So he just chose not to include it.
That's so smart.
I like that. Yeah, that's a really good choice.
I can imagine that what's she going to say about her stalkers? Probably nothing. But she seemed to have made some kind of truce mm-hmm. with Jeff.
Yes.
To the point where she's like, oh, it's Jeff. Hey, Jeff. How's it going? Oh, I'm really busy. I got to run, but it was good to see you. Like, she kind of has that attitude with Jeff at the point that he comes to the conventions. And then Kelly and her don't really get to really.
No, Jeff has a lot of pictures with her.
Look, we're friends now. This is her husband and me. Look, I took the high road and let him win. That's basically his attitude.
I love that part is when he shows. That's another one of those cringe moments that I think they use sparingly and effectively. Is he shows this picture of Jeff and Tiffany's husband, Ben George.
Yeah.
And he says, boy, look at the expression of jealousy on that guy's face. And they hold on Ben George's expression, which is a totally normal, fairly neutral / I'm smiling for a picture. There's no jealousy whatsoever. No.
To be fair, I guess Tiffany could think of Jeff Turner as the one that did get away.
True.
Got away from the authorities.
The one who was legally kept away, perhaps we should put it.
The one that got legally kept away with a restraining order from multiple states.
Oh, as a reminder, the thing back to just the depressing murder of a Hollywood starlet, but Rebecca Schaefer, the reason that was brought up maybe was the fact that the guy who murdered her, that's when they passed more anti-stalking laws in California.
Oh.
In 89 is when she was on a sitcom called My Sister Sam. Actually, don't know that the Bardo was obsessed with Tiffany. I'm double checking on that, but that was the guy that was mentioned.
Wow.
There is a picture in that Vice magazine article of Jeff and Tiffany. It's just so sweet. He's got just this biggest smile.
He looks
so happy.
Ecstatic in every picture with her.
Yeah, it makes his day. And then the whole beach concert thing. Oh, Lord.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, man.
Like, that's the third time that we see Tiffany. It's like the second Tiffany performance appearance that we see. The first is at the porn convention. Then there's the beach concert. And then the last one is in Vegas. And it's in Santa Cruz. It's on the Santa Cruz boardwalk.
Boardwalk, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, first of all, I watched that thinking that it's like my worst nightmare to be at a Tiffany concert on the beach in Santa Cruz. Like,
I was like, where did they find all these Tiffany fans? Because they do a man on the street with all these people who willingly came to a Tiffany concert.
And she booked a concert in Santa Cruz knowing that Jeff would be there. I would just be like, let's never play Santa Cruz.
Let's play
San Jose or Modesto. Let's skip Santa Cruz.
What's up in Hayward these days?
Yeah.
But I watched a cut scene on YouTube of him singing along to that song on the beat. The cutaways to what I think they're saying basically to the audience. They're basically saying, I think this guy's a stalker too. Because they do all these, cutaways to different guys with this like stalkery glazed look on their face.
Men in their 30s that like for some reason are still into this pop star from their youth,
and they're by themselves and they're entranced by this woman, and then she's like I think we're alone now, that classic rock star thing. And she puts the mic out. Nobody says anything. And then she's like, come on, I know there's some people who know this works.
But they don't show a lot of the concert, I'm sure for music licensing reasons, but they show pre-concert, which is when a lot of Boardwalk employees are walking around, setting up chairs, clearing things away. And Jeff is there and he talks to them and they clearly don't care at all and or are slightly afraid of him, because all he just says to them, there's going to be a Tiffany concert here. And they're like, great, I don't care. And he's like, me and Tiffany are really good friends. And they're just totally blank expressions on their faces.
They're just building the stages.
It is unclear whether they speak English or if they're just trying to make him think that they don't speak English so that they can get away from him.
Yeah. He's like, that's my blanket to that group. They're like, and she's a really good friend of mine. And then he's explaining to that woman who's like, oh, I've seen her a few times. And he's like, she's my best friend.
Yeah.
We talk all the time. I've seen, and the woman's face is just kind of like half like, you've got to be kidding. And half, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
You know,
at first she's like, this seems semi-plausible. And then he keeps going. And then you see that like, well, if you're such good friends with her, why are you here?
Yeah.
Why are you not backstage or with her? Or
it's that smile that people were like, I don't really believe you at this point.
Yeah.
One thing I saw, Jeff has had a little bit of post this movie success. He was cast as a very creepy stalker character in a music video by the Teddy Bears with CeeLo Green. So that's online. And then he's been, I don't know if it was a voice actor or just on this Adult Swim show.
Oh, really?
I need to double check.
I need to know
what the name of that is.
What about Kelly?
Yeah, what about Kelly?
What has she gotten?
I don't know if there's anything other than that, she has a girlfriend.
Kelly's a girlfriend.
Probably running around Denver.
Yeah.
Now maybe legally smoking weed. We don't know.
Who knows? And then
we can only hope.
Let's move into Act 3, Alyssa Milano.
Yes.
Oh boy.
Quick, like really good ending, I think, to this movie.
It's amazing.
Jeff says, I am no longer obsessed with Tiffany. We are still great friends. But I am now erotically fixated on Alyssa Milano. And this is so weird because apparently the filming for this documentary ended in 2008, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or around 2008, maybe let's say at the latest 2007.
The first cut came out for festivals in 2008.
Okay, so maybe 2007, pretty likely. Alyssa Milano, and then there was somebody else too who he's kind of into. Oh, because he says, so he says, I still love Tiffany, but I've accepted that she is going to stay with Ben George. So now I am going to try to marry Alyssa Milano.
Yeah. That's such a reveal. That's such a beautiful reveal, the way they set that up, too, because you're like, Jeff, that's so good. Good.
Yeah.
You're over her.
Yeah.
Good. And then he turns and he holds up the Alyssa Milano.
Yeah. Like, and then he's got these stacks and just, I think he shows like an album that she had.
DVDs, I think.
Is it just DVDs?
I think so.
Like the Poison Ivy. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Soft erotica.
I think Poison Ivy 2 or 3 maybe, because Poison Ivy 1 is Drew Barrymore, right? All right, never mind.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, okay, George.
Time to
I think
lube.
You probably know better.
Yeah, we should just ask him.
And then he gets in trouble for stalking Alyssa Milano.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, because he shows up at He talks about going to her house and that he had to go through the woods.
That might not be in the movie. That might be just
that might have been a cutscene because I don't. I totally would have remembered that.
I think it happened. I think it happened post 2010. Oh, there's a thing on the website on YouTube where he explains his side. Of the Alyssa Milano story.
Yeah, he gets caught stalking Alyssa Milano,
like at her actual house.
Goes to her house through the woods, and then like her.
She lives in LA, I assume.
I assume, and her husband comes out and he's like waving at him. And like,
I can just imagine him smiling and waving.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And Jeff talks about Holly. He's like, well, there was all this, like, you know, it was hard to get to her house. Like,
yeah. Like he was, I just wanted to give her a Christmas present. It was the holidays. Yeah. I thought I should come visit.
Yeah. And it's like, so I had to go through the woods. It's almost like, didn't they think that if there's all the security, people weren't able to get to their house?
Yeah.
Like he was almost blaming it on them.
Yeah. That's what he does. He blames it on them. Yeah.
It never, it's like it's never occurred to him that somebody might not want people just coming to their house, which is somebody who is alone a lot would never think, you know, why would you put up all these barriers to people getting near you? You know, I don't think he can imagine having people want to talk to you.
Oh. Oh, yeah. That's an interesting point.
He like has a whole conspiracy theory about stalking as a law too. Like he thinks it's like
right.
He's got all these stalking books. He's just like, and he's also like, I'm just anti-fascism.
Yeah,
that's like why everyone should allow me to go to their house. That's fascist to not allow me to go to their house.
Yeah,
yeah. He does have these stacks of books.
Oh, I wrote her parents an anniversary card. Big. Oh, I'm such a dangerous man.
Right.
That's basically what his like funny like sarcasm about that.
I like he holds up that book of like this sexual perversion of stalking, and he's like, ooh, isn't that a titillating title?
It's like, I'm very pure. I've accepted that there's not going to be a sexual relationship with me and Tiffany, but I will still send her things.
And the great thing about Christianity, because he turns to Christianity in this movie, or it doesn't turn to, but
as we all should.
And then
hail Jesus.
And then he hail Jesus.
Hail Jesus.
Good.
But the thing about Christians, they'll bring in anybody.
Good impression of Christianity.
Hail Jesus.
H-E-L-L Jesus.
Hail Jesus.
Oh, you know, I'm thinking of Satan. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right. You know, I don't like the word Satan, so we call him hail Jesus. Yeah.
Right. That's hail Jesus over there.
Yeah.
But Christians will—they'll accept anybody in their flock. So that's good that Jeff.
I love that scene where he's with his church community and he is talking to them about seeing Tiffany at a porn convention.
Yeah,
and again, he's like, "I went to a convention of like-minded people," and they clearly don't really know how to react. I kind of wish that scene had been extended because I wanted to see. I mean, I guess probably just the church people didn't really want to be filmed and wouldn't give releases. But I was very curious about how his, you know, fellow churchgoers feel about him and about specifically his Tiffany obsession, which he seems to be pretty open about.
I was just thinking of someone I know who some people have asked me whether or not this person has Asperger's, and I've been like, I didn't think they did, but then after watching this I was like, this person and Jeff would get along very well. Like they're kind of similar personas. And it's that moment of just like not reading the social cue of like, okay, well, it's been good catching up with you, Jeff. Like, and just keeping on going. That's the thing that would happen. And so you'd like to see that in a church where, like, basically him in a confessional where the priest is all right, well, you know, that's, you should do a couple.
Got a lot of other, other sheep to shepherd.
Yeah,
so
let's move it along here.
What ends stalking for them outside of the law, besides the law? What can help curb, I wonder, stalking?
Oh, in general?
For these
people that are obsessive?
Yeah. Besides drugs, I mean, is there some way to get to them?
For people on the spectrum, or?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know.
They all got that. A little bit of social. I mean, thing is, Jeff seems pretty social with his friends.
He's got friends. He talks to his family. Friends. Yeah.
I think that would help a lot. I think actually being in a relationship would make fantasy relationships maybe go away. That may not be true, because sometimes when I'm in a relationship and it's not going good, I'm like, oh, if only I could replace this person.
If only me and Kristen Wiig, I don't know. Oh, that's my fine. Go-to for it.
Drew Barrymore.
Everyone's
just
listen to this podcast and you're going to see us in the news in a little bit.
I only know her where she lives in Santa Monica. I completely forgot what I was going to say.
No, it's fine.
Who were you obsessed with as a child?
As a child?
Okay, let's say, like, whatever. Like, the era where Jeff mentally stopped growing. When, like, you know,
okay,
maybe
so
teenage,
what was my peak teenage, of, like, celebrity hero worship?
Yeah, maybe.
I was never super worshipful of celebrity. I mean, it's weird because I know I must have had... I would say I have had celebrity crushes, but, you know, but none where I was...
not like one where like that's my jam, that's my guy.
Well, I've had like lady. That's my jam, but I was never, I never wanted to meet that. And this is another weird thing is I've never. Sometimes people talk about having sexual fantasies about various movie stars that they're attracted to, and I, you know, there are certainly actors that I find attractive, and and you know, but I've never been able to have an actual fantasy about them because I can only imagine them as actors, and I know actors, and I know actors are terrible. So I'm like, oh, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is so hot, and then I imagine him as a person. I'm like, he's probably so boring.
So that's how you solve the stalking problem. Then you
is you meet some fucking musicians, and then you, I can't. I mean, it's a sort of a problem because now I have a harder time enjoying music because I'm like, these dudes are probably assholes. Yeah. These are real douchebags.
Doesn't it suck when you find out one of your favorite actors or musicians, they're like, I met him, I hung out with him, he's a complete asshole.
And you're like, or almost worse is that they're just very boring. Right. They're very normal. And then you're like, oh, they're not this intense, like, you know, very perceptive person. And I mean, maybe they are, but it's just in your limited area. I mean, it's really put a damper on, I used to love music. I used to listen to a lot more music than I do now. And now I can really only listen to music by people that are dead.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And you date a comedian, right? So that's even like another world.
Yeah.
I want to fuck the Nyan Cat. That's what I wanted to say this whole
fuck the Nyan Cat.
I'm kidding. Like, they'll never let me down. The Nyan Cat will never let me down.
It'll just go on forever. Yeah, it's kind of sucks because I, it's weird, you know, being like when I think I watched, this is actually, I would say my number one celebrity crush, my like, my initial celebrity crush ever was Jake Gyllenhaal, which when I was in middle school, at one point, one of our teachers, kind of killing time before winter break, was like, let's watch October Sky. And I was like, I'm into this. And then I watched Donnie Darko right after that because Jake Gyllenhaal was in it. And that was like a cinematic milestone for me. It was really, me I was too. Like, holy shit. Yeah. For a lot of people, I think. And I only watched it because I wanted to fuck Jake Gyllenhaal. So thanks, dude. Same thing with Gael Garcia Bernal. Like, I don't remember what movie I initially saw him in, but then because of wanting to watch more movies he was in, I watched Amores Perros, which was an early, like, Iñárritu movie. And then I like it a lot better than 21 Grams. But anyway.
If you want to see more of Jeff Turner, the TV show he's on Adult Swim is called Hot Package.
Oh, he's on Hot Package?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So if you want to fuck Jeff Turner, there's two things you can watch.
That's crazy.
YouTube.
Hot Package.
YouTube boobies, which he likes to say.
It's produced by the same company that produces Nathan For You and Tim. It's Tim and Eric's production company.
Okay,
absolutely.
The people that you know.
Yeah. So Hot Package is like that's
it's
amazing.
It's like a parody of like Entertainment Tonight type show.
Exactly. It's a parody celebrity news show. And I've actually never seen it, but it's a very, very good premise.
And Pat O'Brien is on it. That is a very funny idea for Adult Swim is really killing it. Yeah.
They do good work.
Absolutely. It's really,
they do
really
good work. Yeah. So the movie ends primarily with him talking about his love now of Alyssa and how that he's happy that Tiffany's moved on and he's just going to be good friends with her. And then how do we wrap up with Kelly?
It's kind of just that Kelly has a friend now. Yeah. Kelly has another friend who is not terrible.
Right. Not the worst.
Kelly talks about how now she's, I don't think Kelly gets a job, but Kelly says that she's been hanging out with this. Does she get a job?
Kelly does get off of SSI. That is mentioned in the commentary.
In the commentary.
So by 2010, when the DVD comes out, Kelly is off of SSI, which I guess is a good thing. It's viewed as a good thing.
If she's working, then
I mean, there's a thing. The Jeff's friend was like, that was the biggest mistake Jeff made was going to SSI, which I thought was an interesting thing. Because, like, what's he going to do? Like, build, like, a mail order, like, hobby training business? What's he going to do?
He's got, like, he's clearly got social skills of a certain kind. He seems to enjoy talking to people.
And
he seems to be very, I mean,
very
I can
smart.
Yeah. And I can see him working in some kind of capacity where he's around people. And that might, I mean, that might be what his friend was referring to is like,
or a mailroom
or a mailroom or something. Yeah. Something that requires a lot of, energy and enthusiasm and, just very detail oriented you know, I've seen crazier people with jobs.
Oh yeah, yeah. As have I. But yeah, also like the idea, like what were they getting, like $600 or something? That, like that's not enough. Like even by 2008 standards, that's like not.
Santa Cruz is not a cheap place to live.
No, it's not at all.
Was there something in this doc that you wanted to see or wish they hadn't shown or wish they had shown more of? I know you mentioned something earlier, but
it was. I just wanted to see more of. I think that was like the biggest gap for me was I wanted to see more of Jeff's church, because they don't really follow up a lot with it. Is you see him go to church like a couple of times, like I think before and after the porn convention, and then they kind of stop talking about it. And so I'm wondering, does he still go to that church?
Yeah.
I mean, this is just is one of those things where like it's. I've been thinking about a lot also recently about churches and how they function as social groups and things like that, and reading a lot of books about religion. So it was kind of catching on to just something else that I'm thinking about a lot now. But yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, how do his, I don't know what you call him, church mates? That seems wrong. Church mates. And especially his like pastor, how do they deal with him? How do they like him? What does he talk about at church? Do they talk? Does he go to other church social functions? And I'm sure it was probably just sort of a, I mean, maybe it wasn't that interesting, or maybe it was just a logistical thing where they couldn't get anybody that goes to the church to sign appearance releases. But
there
I don't
is,
know.
There is a distinct parallel with Christianity and believing you're a friend with some mythical.
Yes. You know, like, oh, yeah, you've got a friend in Jesus, and Jesus loves you. Yeah. And if you and Jesus ever hung out, Jesus would probably leave
Christians
Ben George for you.
Stalkers of God.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just somebody who the law cannot really have
There's
a lot
no
of.
Restraining order that can hold you back from Jesus, from your personal God.
Jesus just shutting his house.
So like, the one of the ways, the way we end this is I generally ask, what was like a first documentary that you saw? I call it the gateway documentary that got you into watching documentaries, or even a favorite documentary that you would like to recommend.
I might need to think about that for a second. If you guys want to talk about something else while I think.
So space.
Is it the final frontier for you? So George, you've never been.
My career is going great.
It is. Yeah. Good job on all that. Good job on your career. You've never been convicted of stalking anyone?
No, I mean, okay, if we're really gonna get, there's stuff. We've all done things we're not proud of.
I love how these.
I'm trying to think. Yeah.
Before I answer your question, let me make a few statements about humanity in general.
I just want to say my wife is sticking.
Nobody's
with me.
Perfect, and no, no, I'm trying to think. I think I mentioned this on another podcast. Like, I was like a fanboy of like musicians, and so when I discovered an attractive female musician in like high school, it was kind of like, ooh,
these are.
I had a little Juliana Hatfield thing.
Oh, wow.
So this is dates the story immensely, but you know, it's like a 90s story, but,
those are the best ones.
And then I did meet her occasionally because I would go see her bands play, and it wasn't like I had my other things. Like I did a zine. So like if I wanted to meet somebody, I'd just be like, do you want to do an interview for my zine? So that was pretty much like, hey, do you want to like be on my podcast like 1996? Yeah, exactly.
That's
so that was like my kind of whatever. I never really had like a relationship with them. But then I think when I moved to when I went to college and was around actual musicians all the time, I just realized like, oh, they're just people. And now at the point now, and I think I maybe was that way about like, yeah, comedians. I was like, oh, it'd be great to hang out with like Paul F. Tompkins or something.
Yeah.
And it probably would be great to hang out with Paul F. Tompkins. But in general, it's like, you get to a point where like these are basically your peers, even though they are much more successful than you.
Not going to try and compare myself to Paul F. Tompkins, but I can imagine him as a person.
Right, you imagine them as a person. Like, yeah, they're not your peers.
Which maybe 6 years ago I wouldn't have been able to do.
In a success sense.
Right.
But they're just like, we do similar things.
Which is, I think, why now when stories come out about comedians, and it's been recently there's been, I mean, I also pay more attention to comedy news, I guess, but of comedians doing terrible sexual abuse things, I'm always like, I'm really not surprised by Bill Cosby. Yeah. I am really not surprised by Louis C.K., that whole like Louis C.K.
Yes, that's been coming up.
It's not as well known as the Bill Cosby thing, because it seems less serious and also less widespread. And
he's dealt with it more directly, I think, than Bill Cosby ever
and
has.
It was,
he tries to communicate with whoever is accusing.
Yeah.
With Bill Cosby has just been like had layers of lawyers dealing
with it. Right.
And completely not only saying I'm not going to talk about it, but it didn't happen. Then he gave that weird rambling speech the other night on that news show when they asked him directly, did it happen?
Oh,
and he
was
like, I took a left. And I was like, what? I was like, did you drank out of the wrong cup? I think
it
seemed kind of roofied.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I might go with Cosmos.
Oh, nice.
I mean, I would go with Sagan. More of TV, TV documentaries, Cosmos, Planet Earth, stuff like that, which are not really, documentaries in the sense that you guys are talking about.
No,
but they are. They're just nature documentaries.
I mean, that definitely counts. I mean, we're doing a lot of different genres. I mean, I think specifically this kind of weird Americana genre is just easy to kind of latch onto.
You know what's a really, really... really lame first documentary to be into. It's like when you talk about like what got you into music and it was like just somebody shitty. It's like Bowling for Columbine.
Oh,
and
stuff.
And I don't even remember Bowling for Columbine now, but I think it was the first time that I had seen a like celebrity documentary. And same thing with like Super Size Me, where I was like, yeah, this.
Yeah.
And it's like not even that very good documentary. But it was one of those things that brought the idea of documentary making to like a higher, it sort of seemed to put it on a higher level.
Yeah. I mean, Super Size Me is specifically like a gimmicky thing.
Yes.
I mean, like Spurlock.
Bowling for Columbine also very gimmicky.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, I've never seen Bowling for Columbine, but I've seen this outtake, which is all about the prisons in Norway, which is like basically at the time I was like, oh, these people in prison in Norway live better than I do.
Yeah.
Like Burzum is making more music.
Right.
He has more free time to make music in prison in Norway than I can, like living in my shitty apartment in Oakland.
I think Bowling for Columbine is my favorite Michael Moore documentary.
Yeah.
It's really...
It's definitely better than Fahrenheit 9/11.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's also a terrible
really
title.
That did not turn out as well.
It's not turned out
everyone
at all.
Thought that was going to make. That was the doc that was going to ensure that Bush wasn't going to be reelected.
Yeah.
And that did nothing.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it being like, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Michael Moore's definitely dropped in my general estimation over the years, but
and I recently
Roger
was actually my boyfriend was watching the documentary that he made. I don't remember what it's called, but it was the one he made before Bowling for Columbine, and it's about Flint. It's just about
that
Flint,
is
Michigan.
Roger Me.
That's it. Yes, yeah. Roger Me. Yeah,
which is pretty great.
Yeah, and it was. I was like, wow, this is. And again, it's like way more low budget than either Bowling for Columbine or Fahrenheit 9/11. And it's like as the budgets have gotten higher, they have gotten less interesting and less really just real.
He was truly like the underdog.
He really was.
And he loses that authority of being the underdog.
As he gets more and more famous
and rich. And Roger Me ushered in a whole new style of documentary filmmaking.
It really did.
It changed the landscape.
And it's, and it is like advocacy in a sense. It's like it has an agenda and it's not hiding it. And I think that is this. Okay, I'm done.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you. All right. And Alyssa Milano, we love you as well. Thanks for listening.
I loved Alyssa Milano, man. Oh, man. You can find episodes on SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please subscribe, review, and rate.
And you can follow our guest, Sarah June, on Twitter at HeySarahJune. And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
And Alyssa, I am single. This show is produced by Will Scovel. Our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to talk about a documentary or have a guest in mind for us to talk to, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com. And who's the boss, Paco?
You are, George.
Thanks.